You're listening to Spartan Up Podcast. We're going to interview somebody every week from all over the world and see what they did in their life to become successful, no matter how they defined it. We are here for Spartan Up Podcast on a unusual rainy day with Dr. Johnny, Sephra, Dr. Nye, and Marion the nurse.
We got to get our doctorate, Joe.
We got to get rid of the doctor for me.
Well, I got to get
We interviewed Michael Roberts from Outside Magazine.
Even though we're inside.
You guys are going to love this guy. He's interviewed for years amazing athletes. The Kelly Slater, for instance, will come up later. And I think he's got some real good lessons that he learned by interviewing all these guys.
Cool. Good. So this is the best of, instead of just one person, it's
like
everything
the,
he's learned.
Like the best of. He really dives heavily into permaculture.
Perfect.
Head first.
Let's head outside.
I'm joking. But yeah, let's
permaculture's not a joke, Joe.
How you doing? We are here for Spartan Up Podcast somewhere in California in an undisclosed location. Mike Roberts, executive editor, Outside Magazine. He's a pretty secretive guy, and we couldn't tell anybody where we are. So, but we're going to talk about 15 years you've been there?
Yeah, 15 years. Unbelievable. Had a lot of different roles over the years, seen a lot of stuff.
You know, you'll like to hear this. I travel a ton right now. I was home 90 days last year, which may not be a lot for you. It's one of those magazines where it just feels authentic and real. Mm-hmm. Like you look at 100 magazines on the wall in the airport, and it's one that's, I don't know, it's awesome, right? You're going to grab it, you're going to get your money's worth.
Well, that's one of the interesting things for me traveling myself. Now I have kids and I travel with them, but I go places all over the world and I see people reading our magazine.
Hot tubs in Hawaii, bike trips in
Marin County hot tubbers. Isn't that what George H. Bush said? You know, there's lots of ways to get your adventure. I've certainly had my tough days and tents and kayaks and expeditions when I was a little younger, and I lived in Central America and spent a lot of time in South America. These days with kids, I'm very excited to start pushing them, but at this point, you know.
How old?
5'3", and another one will be here in 2 months.
Awesome. You're in the thick of it.
I'm in the thick of
Boys, girls?
All boys.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's like...
Little heroes. Yeah,
awesome.
They're exhausting but amazing. And, you know, I'm probably going skiing up this weekend at Lake Tahoe, and I will probably not get any big long runs myself, but I'll be skiing with my boys, and I have to say... I get just the same thrill.
Oh, you know,
take them
out,
guys.
There's no family sport like skiing, right? It's just all
you spend. It's all downhill. Let's be honest here. It's, you know, I take my kids hiking all the time. I take them biking. But skiing, at the worst, eventually gravity will do the job for you. That's what I like skiing.
For me, it was you're on the chairlift. You have no choice.
Yeah.
Like, you're stuck
you're
together,
hanging out.
Right? As literally hanging out.
Oh, with a three-year-old, that's a little nervous. I'm sort of like this, you know, making sure they don't fall off.
So, all right, let's talk about what you've learned over these 15 years at Outside. You've done these incredible adventures. You talk to adventurists. Mm-hmm. This podcast is all about getting people off the couch and getting them ahead in life. Mm-hmm. What have you learned?
You know, there's always a need for all of us to constantly replenish our passion for whatever it is we love about life. And there's different ways to do that. I will say that I have found for myself some form of healthy physical activity is just crucial. You know, I have kids now. I have a very busy job and a busy life. But the thing I refuse to give up is some form of intense physical exercise, because if I don't, I fall apart. And, you know, I was interviewing someone once, and I don't remember who it was, but, you know, they were asked for their secret, and they said, well, you know, I was in this conversation with Richard Branson once, and we asked him, you know, what's your secret? What do you do? And he just said, exercise. Every day. Don't skip it. And that's one of the things I'm not always able to do that, but at some point every day I just stop and I make sure I get something physically active I do, because if you don't, you fall apart. So that I don't think much surpasses that in terms of like the number one lesson, the one thing I hold on to.
Healthy food?
You can have a great car, right? You know, a real souped up roadster, but if you put crappy fuel in it, it's just going to drive terribly. So yeah, you have to fuel yourself right. And you know, the good news is I feel like that is a national obsession now. We are learning, at least amongst, you know, a lot of communities, to eat a lot better. And even if we're not all making the best choices all the time, there's really good information out of there. The opportunities to eat better, you know, interest in local food, interest in growing our own food. I mean, that's an exciting thing to see. I know I eat much better than I did when I was a child, and I'm much more educated and light in that way than my own parents were, although they eat great now, and it's not like they starved me as a kid, but, you know, I ate sugar cereal.
Isn't it funny? I think back then, too, right? There were cigarette smokers, doctors in lab coats, right?
And on the plane.
Nine out of 10 doctors approved Marlboro cigarettes.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of a beautiful thing, really. How, you know, I'm lucky enough to live in Northern California, and, you know, we have a year-round growing season around here in the farmers markets. I mean, you want to, the people ask me, I lived in New York City for a while, and I was born in California, but I lived all around and 5 years in New York City, and I came back, and people are like, what is it? You know, are you so happy to be outdoors and the trails and the water? Yeah. What's the number one thing? And I was like, oh, the produce, man. The produce is incredible, and that's
even with this water shortage.
It's good for wine, apparently. But no, that, you know, like the drought is something that personally really gets at me. You know, you just feel it every day when you wake up. You don't see it rain, and we've had some little spurts this year. And this area, where the secret area we're in Northern California, is doing a little better in other spots. The challenge is, if this is the new normal, you know, how do we re-engineer our lives, our communities, our cities, and everything we do
here. With that.
Yeah, because it's no joke.
I bicycled across the country, and I saw a lot of farms along the way, but there's nothing like you see in California.
Yeah.
I mean, the farms are just pristine, awesome.
Yeah.
It would be a shame.
Yeah. Well, I know, and it, you know, I mean, I just was talking to a friend the other day, is a, you know, engineer, works a lot on this stuff, and I was like, so are we just going to end up with desalinization plants soon? Like, how far is that down the road? You know, it's cost prohibitive today, but, you know, is that what our future is like? I hope not. And I think that, you know, the reality is there's a lot of things we can do to be smarter about our water use, and you can reduce that tremendously. But when it comes to the agricultural side of things, that's a whole different kind of project.
Why don't we take a break? We'll do maybe a couple mile run.
Sure.
And
yeah.
We'll come back and do the other half of this.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds great. I'll go get my other shoes.
I hope you're not sitting still while you listen. If you are, you better get a burpee break in.
A hell of a run.
Yeah.
And it's dry out here.
Yeah, it is dry. No sweat at all.
No sweat at all.
Yeah, it's just like outside San Gordon, Santa Fe. Just
you've interviewed, I don't know how many people in 15 years.
I mean, dozens, of, you know, probably well over 100 sort of
and
people.
And the most extreme there are. And yeah. So there's stuff to learn from those people.
Yeah,
so
I would say that's the best part of my job, is talking to those folks, hearing their stories. You know, it just sort of rekindles my fire for, you know, just about everything.
Because they push limits.
Yeah, they push limits, they embrace risk, and, you know, and that can be all kinds of risk. It can be athletic, you know, achievements. Some of these folks are business people, architects, and creative folks that, you know, outside covers all this, and it's just people who are, they're very much alive, and they're very much just going for it.
So, let's start with surfing.
Yeah. Well, I've had a lot of great interviews there. I have spent a lot of time over the years talking with Kelly Slater, who is, you know, now he's 42 years old, around my age.
Is he the best? I'm not a big surfer, so.
Well, Kelly Slater is sort of the, you know, he's sort of the Michael Jordan of surfing for a long time. I mean, all the world championships, you know, I think the reality is when you look at what he's done in surfing, it beats anything anyone has done in every other sport. I mean, it's just not even worth having that argument. You know, I mean, the number of world championships and the year, you know, he's done it from age 19, now he's 42.
Wow.
He pulled off a maneuver just this last year that no one's ever done. He's 42.
Wow.
You know, and he's still a top competitor. You know, he hasn't won a world title in a couple of years now, but he was right in the mix at the end there. So that's just unbelievable. And,
yeah.
You know, is it because he's a natural specimen? Partly. I mean, he's a really flexible guy, but it's also just because, you know, he's a fierce competitor and has not, he was like a pit bull, has not been able to let go.
Yeah. And so what could we learn from that if we're, you know, just a regular person trying to get through our day?
Well, there's different parts of it. I mean, I think at this stage in his career, you can learn from, you know, talk about someone who's made really incredible choices about what he eats and how he treats his body. I mean, surfing is known as a sport where a lot of guys go out there on the tour and they party. And this guy's always been a very clean living guy. But I think if you really look at the arc of his career and the conversations I've had with him, this guy had some difficulties, you know, personal life-wise. I mean, he had sort of a challenging family upbringing. His dad was a big drinker, and he really worked a lot of that out in the water. You know, he found a sort of zen and a peace in the waves, and he was able to, you know, take those two parts of his life out of the water, his life in the water, and take lessons and bring them back and forth. And I, you know, having hear him talk about that, and he's a very honest and open guy, that's been really impressive to me and really sort of inspiring. You know, to you're not just sort of out there doing your sport and then there's the rest of your life. It's like these things, they have an ability to talk to each other, and there's a reason you're doing them.
I'm thinking back, I grew up in Queens, Brooklyn area, and I'm thinking like mid-40s, people were on the down,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They're overweight.
Yeah.
And so to hear that somebody at 42 is still,
well, that's right. And, you know, I'm right behind him age-wise, and it is really amazing to look at so many athletes But at this age, we're doing that.
So it doesn't have to stop.
It doesn't have to stop, and especially true if you're in endurance sports. I mean, some of these things we do better now. I mean, I do not play basketball like I did when I was younger, but I'd outbike my 25-year-old self, and I think I can run longer than my 28-year-old self.
Sure.
And that's just because you put in the time, and honestly,
That's a big takeaway, right?
Some of this is, it's mental. You learn how to suffer a little bit better. And, you build, there's something that builds, we're a little wiser, and we know how to keep going, so.
Climbers.
Yeah.
Give me some great climbers you've interviewed.
I've gotten to know some of these guys over the years, and I would say that the story that's been most inspiring to me recently, this Maru film that premiered at Sundance, and I'm sure very soon now is going to get a huge distribution, about this peak that these North Face climbers, Comrade Anchor and Jimmy Chin and Renan Arstuk took on. We were with them early on at Outside, and we did an early story about, them going back to this area where this incredibly difficult, dangerous peak that had never been climbed, and they failed miserably at first, and they suffered, and it wasn't fun. I mean, this was not a pleasurable expedition at all, and that there they were going back and doing it again. And that story, talking about a direct translation of what life is like, I think that's probably why, the crowd at Sundance fell in love with the climbing film.
But so do you think that the takeaway there is they had a very specific goal, they knew what they wanted their legacy to be, and there was nothing that was going to get in the way?
I think that's part of it. I just think you don't give up. You just don't get knocked down. You don't just say, well, that was really hard, I don't want to go do that again. And that's, they're the perfect archetype for that. But again, with Outside, we talk to so many people like that who are willing to endure these incredibly difficult ventures,
But there are times, I became friendly with David Beshears.
Sure.
There are times in life when you're supposed to turn around.
Yeah.
Or at least pivot.
Well, that's a lesson too. I mean, you look at that whole thing about there's old climbers and there's bold climbers, but there's no old bold climbers, right? And, these guys failed on their first attempt because they came down. And that happens on big high altitude peaks where there's extreme danger, but... Yeah, I mean, there is a lesson to stop today and come back and fight tomorrow, for sure.
How do you know? You've interviewed a lot of people.
Sometimes it's not getting swept up in the moment. I mean, that summit fever is a real thing. Some of the great alpinists, Ed Viesters was known for this. I mean, people consider him a really boring climber, but, he achieved what he did, steady Eddie, because he would get there and say, not today, that's too dangerous, and he wasn't caught up in it. So I think, that's a part of it, is knowing your limits. It doesn't mean you're not, you can embrace risk and be bold and not be stupid and win a Darwin Award.
Yeah, it's a gray area, right?
Yeah, I think it is. But I think some of the folks, they actually really know what's safe and what's not. And I think some of those folks are just, they're not given the credit they do for their homework and the research and their understanding of their sport. It's not just throwing themselves out there, whether it's a Laird Hamilton surfing or Ed Viesters climbing or any of these huge heroes. They know what they're doing. They put a lot into it, and they train themselves, physically, mentally, emotionally, for years to get to where they are. And then when that moment comes, they make the right decision.
Yeah. So what there's a famous saying, right? You can train for that moment of opportunity, right? And you're just waiting for that moment of opportunity to appear.
And that's, of course, out in the public, and sometimes in the stories or the covers of Outside, you're just seeing that one moment of glory, and you're not hearing what went into it.
Let's end with Vister's quote I love, which is, getting up is optional, getting down is mandatory.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You live. Yeah.
You're awesome.
All right. Great interview. Thanks. Thank you.
What did you guys think? I don't even know. Do you read Outside Magazine?
Yeah, I do.
You like it?
It's a great magazine. Yeah.
It's a great magazine, right? Yeah, age where magazines should just die.
Yep. No, I know. I know what you're saying. The idea is we read 99% of what we read online, right?
Yeah.
But it's one that I'll put it this way. I'm very grateful when I'm at somebody's house and that's in the bathroom.
All right.
Serious. It's something someone's reading.
You can't
take
your iPad in there?
Well, no, I try not to. I'm trying to break myself of that habit.
You read outside?
I read outside, but the sunlight is pretty bright, so I typically read inside.
All right. How about you?
I see what you're saying about magazines. I think in terms of like saving trees, saving paper, it makes sense for things to go digital. But for me, I get nauseous when I read on screens. I like have to read in print. Outside magazine's great, and I feel like I don't know the entire lineage of that genre of magazines, but it seems like they were kind of on the forefront of those that content. So, and you know, I think he had a lot of really good things to say. And he said,
exercise every day.
Yeah, and he quotes Sir Branson, exercise, don't skip it. You know what I mean? It should be a part of your life, not something that's considered something extra.
Yeah, it's not an extra. It should be the nucleus of your day, every day. And I think we all agree with that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I think your kids will agree with that.
Two things I was saying. One is you asked about reading Outside Magazine. I assume you've read it because they did a great article a few years ago that really centered on Spartan Race's growth. So that was amazing. But the other thing, he talks about athletes that he's interviewed and that he's met over the years. And I thought it was interesting that he said that he feels that Kelly Slater, over the length of his career, is the world's greatest athlete. So that's and I'm a big surfing fan, but I thought that was a really, really cool thing that he picked that guy out as being the most dominant athlete.
Yeah, no, I mean, anybody that's surfing 25-foot-plus waves is a pretty serious athlete.
Well, and to me, more importantly, is 12 years, I don't know if it was straight, but 12-time world surfing champion. That's pretty incredible for a sport that's dominated by young guys.
Yeah, and that has inconsistent terrain, for lack of a better term, every time they play.
Speaking of young guys, we've not heard anything from Colonel Nye yet on this one. I'd like to go to...
Well, he's cranky.
Well, the only thing I would say is when you're talking about world's greatest athlete, that kind of stuff, it's interesting. I mean, having lived in Hawaii and then my son lived in Hawaii, so we spent a fair amount of time there and watching surfing. So without question, surfing's an unbelievable sport, unbelievably hard, and certainly at that level, and certainly at his level. But I'm always kind of curious, some of these sports, what the talent pool is. Mm-hmm. You know, every kid in America grows up playing baseball, football, nowadays soccer, whatever, so you've got millions and millions. How many kids grow up on the North Shore of Oahu surfing, and then you become the best because, or Australia or whatever? So I'm just always curious if that talent pool was 10 times bigger, 20 times bigger, 100 times bigger.
Would he be the best?
Jamaican bobsled team.
Would you stay the best kind of thing? So. You know, he's competing against his pool of people, and he has certainly dominated. You take an NBA player, maybe who's competed against a pool of people 10 times larger. You take some, I don't know, rugby player, cricket player somewhere on the planet, bigger and bigger, soccer player for sure. So anyway, just curious.
Interesting
kind of, how do you measure those things? I don't know.
It's funny, speaking of, he had a great line in there because you just talked about, speaking about sports that have a smaller talent pool. And he talked about climbing. He talked about the climbing movie. And I love the line. I've heard it before, but he said there are old climbers and there are bold climbers, but there are no old bold climbers. And the idea, I mean, you want to talk about a really small talent pool. It's the Masters rock climbing group, free climbing, the Masters free climbing. Alex Honnold,
And some of that self-selection, right? I mean, we don't, a guy like me is not signing up to do that to begin with,
even
when I was young. You know, that's not something I'm going to do, and I certainly wasn't going to look forward to running into a 40-foot wave.
What do you think about his embrace the risk attitude?
I love it.
Yeah.
And again, though, when you look at these people who are pushing the envelope, and you mentioned in an earlier one, the respect they have for a lot of the extreme athletes, the thing about, you know, like a skateboarder going out and is creating tricks and is like putting his ankles on the line every time he goes out there. And I've thought that about athletes. You know, we reward the baseball players and the basketball players and whatnot. They take very, very little risk in their sport. Like, to become the best at that sport, you have to work really hard, but there's no real risk. You're not going to like have life-threatening injuries, as opposed to the world's best snowboarder is putting his life on the line every single day that he goes out there to do these massive tricks.
Some of these guys in the X Games on their BMX bikes or doing the backflips or even the motocross.
Kiteboard.
You know, those guys are insane.
And this guy has obviously been around the best of the best in a lot of these extreme sports. So clearly he has to embrace that idea of embrace the risk, because it's the world that they live in and that they create with the magazine. Certainly we encourage people to do that. You know, I think about Spartan Race. And to you or me, who've done, you know, bigger races, we go out and we say, this is an awesome race. It's a fun test. But we don't see it as risk. But I know from when I'm out on those courses, there's a lot of people, they're terrified to go up on that wall. That's a huge risk for somebody
them, right?
who hasn't done it before. So I think that we really create an awesome portal, you know, where somebody comes out and it's a huge risk for them to go out and do that. And when they're done, they go, wow, that's cool. And they take on a bigger race and whatnot. And so I think certainly your business, your company is part of that embrace the risk culture for sure.
Well, I mean, just even embarrassment's a risk.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I mean, you want to go out there and
being a comic. Is a risk.
Oh, right, yeah.
Get up on stage.
You show up and you're that guy getting off the couch, and you're showing up and maybe your body doesn't look like some of these elite athletes that are showing up to run the race.
Yeah.
You know, and so you've got to do that. You've got to show up, and then you're just kind of curious what somebody's going to say. It's like walking into a gym.
Yep.
You know, and are you going to be the smallest guy in the gym kind of thing, you know, mm-hmm. or are people going to make fun of you? Well, mm-hmm. I've never actually seen that in the real world, but it's always portrayed or what's the word?
She'll come up with a word. Yeah, I'm sure.
Personified? Yeah. Projected?
Projected, maybe.
But anyway. I have seen that. I have seen that in real life. You know, we have our races where you'll have a 500-pound person out there running,
right?
Or you know, we've got adapted athletes who you know are missing a leg, whatever. And it's the great thing about the culture is I have yet to see somebody mocked. I mean, it's right. always just massive
camaraderie
yeah. and applause, and they're helping that person over the wall.
Support.
And the respect you see, and I think it's because most of the people out there, even the gym rat, they're a little bit outside their comfort zone. Like I always see, you know, you see five big buff guys at the end of a Spartan sprint, high-fiving each other, like it's the craziest thing that's ever been done. But the cool thing is, it is outside their comfort zone. So when they see this other person doing it, they're already on kind of equal footing there. I think that's really cool. And then the people who are part of the culture and do race after race after race, like the elite athletes and the regular athletes, they've been around long enough to get that this is an awesome thing to see these other people doing it. So that said...
Oh.
Unless you have something.
Well, I was just going to mention really quickly about the culture and about how Outside Magazine's one of the few publications that really personifies and kind of celebrates these heroes of the outdoors. It's like mm-hmm. the Explorers Club interview that we did. You know, there's really few places that, like, it's not an Us Weekly. It's not like these random celebrities. It's people that are doing these amazing feats who are out there pushing limits. And I have to say, Joe, ever since I've surrounded myself near you, I've met a lot of the people that are featured in this magazine. Yeah. And like the culture around it is smaller than you would think. And it's just the most beautiful, giving, and by a lot of people's standards, insane in a marvelous way, and accomplished people of the wilds. And it's just, yeah, it's a wonderful culture to be a part of.
So way better note to wrap up on then, huh?
Yeah. So with that said, to join this culture more, go to SpartanUpPodcast.com.
Thank you for listening to another epic story of success.
To find show notes, video, and audio from this wonderful episode, please visit SpartanUpPodcast.com/073.
Or follow us on Twitter at SpartanUpPod. The Spartan Up Podcast is brought to you by Spartan.
To find a race near you, visit Spartan.com.